Boomer in the Morning is on right now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It would have been a Calgary Flames game day, but it is another one of the postponed matches. The New York Islanders, been a tough year for those Islanders. You want to talk about obstacles and hurdles and challenges. They went on a 13-game road trip, was it, to start the season, came home, couldn't win, injury on top of injury. They are now with 26 points. I mean, they're well back, 14 back of a wild card spot. Crazier things have happened. The St. Louis Blues, well, they were 31st, came back and won the Stanley Cup. Fair enough.
That's always going to be the one, isn't it?
It's a bit of the outlier, but it's there.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. How about the Habs last year? Fire head coach. Barely get to, I don't even think they got to a 90-point pace at the end of the year. Get in an awful division when we look back, in my opinion. And just get hot at the right time. Interim coach. Stanley Cup final.
Yeah. Which is why I wonder about this year. Do you have that asterisk, that weird... How did we get here from where we were? How did they manage to do all of this? And I don't know if it suits the elite teams. All just avoid the banana peels, you'll be fine, or if it just sets up banana peels everywhere for some team that gets the right amount of goaltending at the right time, and all of a sudden you've got all these teams, they're President's Trophy winners, division winners, wondering how the hell are we out in round one or round two and they're still alive. Anyway, the we'll talk some football. We'll talk a few things with our buddy Stephen Brunt, who has joined us on the... We got everything fixed up again. You sounded clear. You sounded great. Good to talk
check,
to you.
Check.
Yes. How's that sound? On? It's perfect. Yeah. Good as ever, buddy. Good as ever. Well, you gave me the list of things here, and I do want to start because I don't want to run out of time. The Evander Kane scenario that we're watching unfold, the fact that he was put on waivers and wasn't claimed is of zero shock. The correct. San Jose Sharks, if they didn't have enough, as it turns out, I know Elliot Friedman reported yesterday, if they didn't have enough already on the cooker as far as things that they could use to their benefit as a weapon to try and negate his contract, they got a couple more. Flying when he shouldn't have been and showing up about a week late than he said he was going to, he just seems to... Rules are for everyone but Evander Kane, it seems. Now we find out that teams, plural, according to his agent, have checked in. Now agents will kind of stoke the fire a little bit.
And teams will definitely check in, even if it means they won't offer anything.
So I guess, is there a level of surprise at all when you hear that teams have checked in? Or will you be stunned if Kane gets a deal? What's your thoughts just on the entire scenario with this guy?
Well, the entire history of the world tells you that somebody is going to sign him eventually. Now, like, first of all, let's go back. So there's a grievance filed. The Sharks are essentially trying to get rid of him with cause. It would appear to the outsider that there's plenty of cause to void his contract, but that is a that is a matter for arbitration and for the grievance process that's part of the collective agreement. And the union has taken it up because, whether it's a good case or a bad case, they have to. Right. I think it's one of the things people misunderstand about, unions, players, associations, sometimes when they support somebody who we think has done something wrong. That's kind of their job. Their job is to support all of their membership in situations like this, no matter who they are, no matter what the details are. So they're doing their job and they will back him in this grievance, whether or not the grievance has any merit or not. And that's, it's going to end up in front of an arbitrator. And look, from the outside, you would think if you add up all the stuff that somewhere in there that probably voids his contract and takes away any responsibility they have to pay him. But, who knows, right? But let's assume that he's a free agent and that he loses this grievance and that nobody is paying him anymore and that the Sharks don't owe him a nickel and that anybody can sign him. There are, red flags aplenty, yes, sort of like Antonio Brown, red flags aplenty, but he can score. He's tough. He fights. If you're going to do a playoff, he would be a useful guy. I guess if you imagined you had a strong dressing room culture and leadership that would, that would prevent him from becoming a disruption, if you had a heart to heart with him and his agent and they said, no, all he wants to do is play hockey and win the Stanley Cup. You're telling me nobody's going to do that? Like, I think somebody's going to do that.
But so where's the line? What activity is it like, okay, now you go to the KHL? Because we've seen that. Like, Bill Peters ain't coaching in the NHL, and he's probably a pretty good coach, but there was a line crossed, and it was like, you got to go elsewhere and or show remorse before you're back. Evander hasn't crossed that line, we're suggesting?
Hey.
It's a long pause. He's thinking
about
it. We lost
you. No, I he's very good thinking on his feet. Very sharp guy.
That's true. He's probably lost him.
I think we probably lost him.
Because you and I were, just to double back to yesterday, sort of the thought that that wouldn't happen. And, of course, Evander Kane at league minimum, the player, is an absolute steal. But there's a PR nightmare waiting for you amongst your fan base. You have a lot of season ticket holders that are females that are aware of, you know, the accusations against him multiple times over. Not that men shouldn't be offended too, but that's especially disturbing, that behavior. The allegations that his wife have levied, some of them have been diffused or disputed, or at least not proven to be true as of yet. But like, this is a bad apple that you have to convince your fan base is okay to be a member of the community.
And it's on me. What I was saying yesterday, that I was going to, that's on me. I'm being foolish. It's
what?
Of course, teams were gonna. Of course, there's going to be interest.
Check in. I still don't know that he's going to get a deal. Like, I think the agent's definitely portraying that a very robust market because he's trying to get the most he can for his player on a 1-year deal. But like, if no one signed him, I wouldn't be surprised.
We talked about it, Stephen. We have back. The other thing we talked about this morning is you have a player that's desperate to get back into the league to clean up his. Well, I don't even know if he cares about cleaning up his reputation. Either way, he needs money, and the best way for him to do it is to be an NHL player. So if he can do a low money deal for the rest of this year and then maybe sign another one, it also speaks to the desperation of NHL teams. And I'm not throwing the Oilers under the bus, but it's the one name that was referenced yesterday by Pierre LeBrun. And the Oilers are a successful franchise. They're a big money franchise, but they, in terms of chronological, the spot that they're in with their number one player, they are desperate. They need to do some winning here in a hurry with Connor McDavid on the clock, so to speak. The desperation is all there's. Take your pick. Who's got more of it in this situation?
Yeah, no, it's really roll the dice, right? Like again, there is going to be a. And I'm sorry, I missed what you said over the last minute or so while we were in the off in the ether here. But somebody's it's a roll of the dice, right? Any team that picks him up is going to be rolling the dice because. They are going to be trying to do a risk reward analysis here, and the risk is obvious, and the reward is, you know, potentially really high. You know, if he was on the straight and narrow for 3 months, you know, into the playoffs, he's an asset, right? And guys like him aren't. It's not like they're just out there, you know, in terms of the hockey playing part of them. There's not guys out there being that you could sign at a relative bargain that squeeze them under the cap somehow and add him to your roster midseason, like. You know, without going through the trade deadline, giving up assets, giving up futures, whatever else you would have to do. So, yeah, the Oilers would be exactly the kind of team because you're right. There's a sense of desperation there. It's not one more time. You know, it's the same thing is happening that has happened throughout the entirety of Connor McDavid's career, essentially. You know, they're talking about firing another coach. You know, what's missing there? You know, well, they need a goaltender more than they need anything. They need a goaltender who's, you know, not 40 years old, who's breaking down. But would a team like that make the reach out and say, hey, yeah, maybe this guy could give us something, and we're the ones that can figure him out, and we're the ones that can keep him in line, and we're the ones that we can max out what he does on the ice and minimize the problems off the ice? Like, again, there's a long history of teams and coaches and organizations believing they can do that. And before you get to the very, very end of the line, you know, generally when you get to the end of the line as an athlete in this kind of circumstance, you know, either you've done something that, you know, breaks the law, or you can't play anymore. You know, you don't have much value. Like, again, I'm not sure how many athletes who, you know, again, Evander Kane is if he had his head screwed on right, you know, like, he's not a superstar, but he's an elite player in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
How many guys would you qualify as elite players who've been exiled to the KHL? You know, not many. You know, maybe none.
There's also not really a rap sheet like he's got.
Nope.
And so before we lost you, I asked, like, where's the line? What has to occur where teams are like, not worth it?
Well, it's the thing is, it's an individual decision, right? Like, there's no line in terms of if he's eligible to play in the league, if the league hasn't run him out, if he's not suspended, then the line is wherever you choose to draw it. It's different situations, but, you know, if I was running the Tampa Bay Bucks, I don't think I would have brought Antonio Brown back after he used the fake vaccine certificate on top of all the other stuff he'd done. But they brought him back because he could catch the football. And then, you know, it blew up on them. So their risk-reward equation didn't work for them in the end. But they, you know, Bruce Arians is a smart guy and a great coach. And that's an organization that won a Super Bowl a year ago. So they obviously, you know, it's not like they're a bunch of dopes. So it's going to be an individual thing. But I just think there will be somebody. You know, if you look around the landscape of the National Hockey League right now, and again, you were alluding to it, it's one of those years where I couldn't tell you necessarily today who the Stanley Cup favorite is. I see some teams that I thought were going to be in it that aren't in it. The schedule's all messed up, obviously, because of COVID and cancellations. It's kind of hard to get a good, strong read. Teams have lost, you know, gone through COVID outbreaks. It's messed up their schedule. So who's the lock to win the Stanley Cup this year? I don't know.
Do we ever know?
I can see. Well, but there's no super team, right? I don't think.
The super teams don't win, right? There's no, like, the President's Trophy Stanley Cup correlation's not strong.
Well, it's true. You know, no, it's a good point. And maybe in a cap area, you don't have a super team anyway. But I can see there's a whole bunch of teams that kind of meet the criteria of, boy, this, you know, not maybe the last kick at the can, but the die is kind of cast in terms of what their roster is right now. And it's not like they're necessarily going to be better next year or the year after that. And people's jobs might be on the line. That's the other thing, right? You know, if you're a general manager or a coach and, you know, you think, boy, if we don't do something here, we're going to get fired. That might, you know, that line that you might draw might shift just a little bit. Self-interest mm-hmm. has a way of doing that.
Put in a week, 10 days of serious damage control, say the right things, do the right things. All of a sudden you start winning. And if by some chance Evander Kane shuts his mouth and plays great and you make some noise in the playoffs, then Bob's your uncle. The pressure.
Well, that's it. And, you know, Boom, I think we sometimes imagine that, well, the fans will never stand for this. The fans will never stand for it. They'll boycott the rink. These days, that's not kind of a moot point. But the fans will be upset. They don't want that guy wearing their, you know, their team's colors. If they win, like, again, I hate to, you know, when has that ever happened?
No, I know.
You know, when has a team's fan base ever said, boy, this guy's really good, but he's a terrible person, so we're not going to support him? It's often the absolute opposite that they rally around, right? And I think it's human nature.
Love a redemption story too, right?
And everybody loves a redemption story. You're bang on. And even if the redemption story is a stretch, it's one of those stories that's really deep, right? It's not just in sports. It's in the culture, in the species. The idea of somebody seeing the light finally, and finally coming and realizing their potential and understanding that the mistakes they made and maturing and all of that, like, it is so common that it's a cliche.
Stephen Brunn is our guest as always on a Tuesday morning. We'll shift gears. We'll talk some football. Brandon Staley, did he cost his team a berth in the playoffs by calling a timeout? It's a pretty thin line, if so. But is it on him that the Chargers are out?
I saw the Rex Ryan outburst about that right now. Rex Ryan outburst is, again, kind of a cliche. But, and of course, Rex's own coaching career, you know, I'm not sure I want to necessarily put that up there against anybody else. But, look, no, you know what I think cost them a playoff spot? The fact they couldn't defend. It's not like the Raiders said, hang on a second, we've got time here. Let's run play action and throw the ball down the field. They ran. It was a running play.
It was a
straightforward. Yeah. Yeah, they stopped the run. If they stop him for 2 yards, the game's over, right? It's a tie. Just like you're earlier in the game, if they, you know, on what, 3rd and 23, the Raiders ran a draw play and converted. Like, stop the run. Like, it's nothing outrageous happened there. It's not like they ran a flea flicker or something after the timeout. They just handed the ball off, and they couldn't stop it. So, the reason he said he called the timeouts is to get his own, you know, personnel. To get the right personnel on the field, et cetera. Well, which didn't seem to be the right personnel.
No.
Didn't work very well. But, I think that's the issue with that team. You know, that was a crazy, amazing, you couldn't script it, right, better for the last game of the regular season. But, part of me is that, I'm neutral on this, but I would have liked to have seen Justin Herbert in the playoffs.
Heck yeah.
I would have loved to have seen them going to Orchard Park this weekend. That'd be a really interesting game. You know, way more interesting than I think the Patriots going in, because, there's not going to be 40-mile-an-hour winds this time. You know, Mac Jones is going to have to throw the ball more than three times. But, that guy's, he's fun to watch. But I think, what let him down wasn't just, I'll tell you, Drew Staley going at 4th-and-2 on his own, 23-yard line?
Well, that's what it was, 18, too, right?
Yeah, it was 18. And inside the 20. Yeah. That's nuts. Like, he cost him that game, but it was like five decisions. It wasn't one, right?
And if this was the first time all season that he'd shown a tendency to do this, but he's been doing it all year.
Not inside his own 20, but yes, they've been very aggressive on fourth down.
It's the analytics. Do you go for it on fourth? Do you punt? Do you kick? But yeah, it was the third quarter at their own 18. They go for it. They don't get it, basically give 3 points to the Raiders.
At least. I mean, it could have been a touchdown. And that's not what the analytics tell you to do. I understand that he's being more aggressive on fourth down, and that's what numbers tell you to do. It never says go for it inside your own 20 in the first half on your 18-yard. It doesn't.
But that's what the Rex Ryans are going to say, right? The dinosaurs are going to.
Of course. But that's the problem is that now people are like, look how dumb the analytics are. Well, the analytics would have said punt that away.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay to kick sometimes. Yeah.
So that cost them the 3rd-and-23. The fact that it's another one of these teams. Again, there's a lot of teams in the NFL like that this year, though, aren't there? Right? Like, it's funny, the other LA team kind of, I know it's, they have their different issues, but you look at the Rams and you say, okay, how come they're not great? Like, what's going on here? Like, look at the names, look at the guys playing on the defensive line. They got the best receiver in the league. They've got a quarterback who, has a crazy great arm still, Matthew Stafford. He can still throw the football. So how come they can't get out of their own way?
Well, lately
they'll go to the Super Bowl.
Lately it's because both teams get a chance at catching them. When Stafford throws them, there's a lot of zip on them, but it's up for grabs for both sides. Man, is he throwing a lot of
17 picks?
It's been a lot the last 2-3 games. It's been a ton. They've got to be concerned. McVay's got to be concerned about it.
And again, there's a team that completely has mortgaged its future, right? They don't have a draft pick like for the next 10 years or something, right? They've traded away everything to get the guys they've got. So, you talk about a team being on the clock. They're on the clock. And I understand, making the getting rid of Jared Goff, because I don't think he's any good either. But I understand what people see in Matthew Stafford when physically they just say, look, this guy, he's got a great arm. But something missing there. But I can go through the list of almost every team in the playoffs this year and say there's something missing, or this, it's an odd year, which is why that last weekend was kind of all that beautiful chaos happened on the last weekend. It's why you go into this weekend and you say, I'm not sure. Like I don't think Pittsburgh's going to beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead, but other than that, I are you totally sure about any of these games? Like, would you mortgage the house on and bet it on any of these games right now? I wouldn't.
There's that game, and then Philly playing a good team hasn't gone well for Philly this year. But outside of that,
Sorry, Steven.
Even the Bucks minus all of this, all of the offensive weapons. Like, if Philly could find a way to make Tom Brady uncomfortable in that game, and again, I don't love Philly. I think it's kind of amazing, actually, they got into the playoffs. But, if you mess with Tom Brady a little bit, get him off his mark, and he doesn't have, he doesn't have Leonard Fournette, and he doesn't have Godwin, and he doesn't have Antonio Brown now. He's got Gronk and Mike Evans, and maybe Mike Evans. Like, you could beat him. Like, they're beatable, is what I'm saying.
Well, and this season's been so hard to figure anyway. With who knows who gets COVID between now and Saturday Sunday, right?
Yeah.
It's such a wild.
There's that too,
I was going to ask you. Ordinarily, when you have an aging, Hall of Fame quarterback on his last legs, there's some real emotional ties to it. I don't know that we're going to feel a lot of that with Ben Roethlisberger this week. Do you? Had his goodbyes. It was a nice night at Heinz Field, and then all of a sudden they win and get some help, and now they're taking on Mahomes and the Chiefs. But are we going to see some sentiment from the public coming out for Ben Roethlisberger, or is he in a different spot than some of the other guys?
think there'll be lots of sentiment in the vicinity of where the rivers meet, where the stadium is in Pittsburgh and in the valley there. There'll be lots of sentiment. There are a lot of Steelers fans in America, but outside of them.
Because when Peyton leaves or Drew Brees leaves, when those guys go, it's a very emotional kind of a thing. Man, it's really over. And I think now people are looking like, no, it's really over. How is this guy still playing?
Yeah, he can't. Well, even Peyton couldn't play, but he won a Super Bowl at the end, right? Like, but he couldn't throw that last season. And yeah, Roethlisberger has looked, he's looked done all year. He looked done when he played last year. And again, you talk about the redemption story stuff. There's some pretty greasy stuff in his past, right? Like the really, really crappy stuff in his past. And I'm sure he saw the error of his ways and he's matured and he's a good family man now. But, I had a trouble watching that last, regular season game when they were oozing all over him on the broadcast without anybody saying, this is some stuff in his past that's not very admirable. He accused of some stuff that, then it really wasn't, those accusations didn't really go away. I don't think he's a big lovable galoot. I think he's probably was a jerk, a bad guy. And maybe he's not a bad guy anymore. So, you combine that with the fact that, he can't throw the ball more than 6 yards downfield anymore. So, it's, both things are in play here. He's a Hall of Fame. He'll get in the Hall of Fame. He won a couple Super Bowls. It kind of feels like they would be better off with almost anybody else playing quarterback right now. They got in by that one 10-yard run at the end of that football game, kind of put them in the playoffs. They're very fortunate to be there.
And I guess last one for you, just by proximity, I know that you're a Hamilton guy, you work in Toronto. Do you feel kind of a Bills Nation thing where you are? Is it a Southern Ontario kind of a thing as well, or is it really just kind of, when we get our NFL team, we'll love them, the Bills, that's a Buffalo thing?
It's interesting because this has been and this would be true for many years. We're going way before the Bills and Toronto series disaster and all of that stuff. But the Bills have tried to make it that happen. The organization, they've tried to market the team here because, there's a lot more people on this side of the border and there's a lot of money on this side of the border, and tried to make it kind of Toronto's team. And they send players up here if you want to get a player on the radio, they're more than happy to do it. They've really worked it probably for the last 20 years. And, the truth is, overall, no. Like, there's loads of NFL fans here, just like there's loads of NFL fans everywhere, but you could, divide them up among the other teams, right? There's Packers fans and Cowboys fans and everything. But there is a pocket, if you kind of look at the geography here, down just south of where I am here, from Hamilton down to through the Niagara Peninsula, which, is kind of oriented towards the States in the way the area around Windsor is oriented to Detroit. And that crowd down there, that's Buffalo territory. There's Sabres fans and there's Bills fans. And if you back in the day when we could, cross the border without vaccine certificates, to go to a Bills game on a Sunday morning, to get across the border, if you stopped at the duty free at Fort Erie, there would be, you wouldn't be able to get a parking spot, and there would be, because, people going in to buy their cheap beer before they drove over to Orchard Park. So there's like a hyper local Bills community here. It's not like, Toronto is going to go crazy if the Bills win the Super Bowl, but there are Bills fans here, and they that stretches back, back to ancient times, really. To the Bills, probably stretches back way beyond the Bills Super Bowl run to, maybe even the AFL Bills. Because it's close, right? Like from my door where I live to Orchard Park, if there's no traffic, is I can get there almost as quickly as I can get to Toronto. It's an hour. So it's easy, it's close. And so there will be some people celebrating if they win, but no, it will not be, it won't be like the Raptors championship parade.
Appreciate you as always, Stephen. Have a fine week. We'll catch up again on Friday, all right?
All right. See
you,
boys.
Yeah, see ya. There you go. I don't know how I feel about the Bills this year. Just because of our connection with Rhett and all of that, we've been kind of jacked about. I don't know if they have any better a shot this year than in years past. It'll depend how
they're in the tournament. And as we talked about, depending how you view the field, there's only one or two teams that you can't just win if they play well. And there's not any team that looks bulletproof. It's been that year. Every team we thought was legit has then stumbled.
If you want to take a list of teams, take teams that you thought you knew what they were, where they were going, and then completely stubbed their toe, you're well into the double digits. It's over half the league that at some point this season have left you with your palms towards the sky, be like, what the f- is going on with you guys?
Yeah.
The Bills, certainly one of them. But I do hope they get past the Patriots here. As cool as a story as it is for Mac Jones, and now they found another quarterback and the defense and all of that, that can wait. I'd like to see Josh Allen, the Bills, do something here this year. We'll break and come back. Our NHL insider is Frank Saravalli. He'll join us. We'll get his thoughts. I don't want it to be all Evander Kane all day, but he has some thoughts on that. And other things making news in the NHL. Yesterday, we had Rich Winter on the radio with Eric Francis at the noon, the Eric Francis Show at noon, talking about the next contract for Andrew Mangiapane and could there possibly be a return to Calgary for Mark Giordano. We debated it. We'll ask Frank about it as well when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're locked on Boomer in the Morning. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It would have been a Calgary Flames game day. Islanders in town, but no dice. We wait until Thursday, Ottawa, as we sit here today on a Tuesday. Scheduled and expected to be the next game for the Flames.
We'll see if any of the rules change.
What could go wrong?
Restrictions, but that says, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then they were to play Vegas on Saturday, but it has been postponed.
That one got done a long time ago.
They did not hesitate, right?
And like why that one gets run a long time ago and the Sens one kept hanging around? Sure, there's good reasons. I can't tell you what they are.
Or reasons. They may not be good. I'm sure somebody had a thought, but she gone. Time for our NHL Insider. He's Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Exports. With inventory shortages across the city, it's the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit SouthTrailExports.com. Frank, good morning, man. How's 2022 going for you? You doing all right?
Yeah, we're hanging in. How are you guys holding up? It got a little warmer up there, huh?
Dude,
finally.
Oh.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it went from about minus 25 to plus 5. That's how we roll here in Calgary.
T-shirt weather.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
It does feel like a beach day when you've been in that month of minus 25. Yeah, let's get the zinc on the nose. Let's go.
I was walking no tarps yesterday on the dog walk. Yeah. Just let those nips hang and get them out there. You know what I mean?
More than I needed.
Yeah, I know it would be. Do you feel like we're close to, with all the COVID, we've got to be close to seeing the end of postponements, don't you think? Or is there any way, do you have any sense in the people that you talk to that there's, we know that the frustration is there, but at some point, is there not a breaking point in the number of games that can be pushed back because of either COVID or we can't have fans eating and drinking in the stands or whatever the case may be?
Well, I mean, the NHL is trying to curb that, but for every game that you see postponed, I mean, look at this one that was supposed to be played tonight between the Flyers and Hurricanes. Carolina had traveled to Philly. The Flyers had no new additional COVID tests, and they postponed the game because the Flyers had been, you know, campaigning with the league behind the scenes quietly for the last few days, saying that they don't have enough healthy bodies to play. Yet they played against the Sharks on Saturday. They finished off a trip out west, including a game against Anaheim, a home game against Pittsburgh. Like, there had been three games here where the Flyers were pretty shorthanded, and yet they felt like in this case and had petitioned the league to say, look, this is a competitive balance issue. So as many times as we think we're kind of turning the corner here, like, I can't say with any degree of certainty that, you know, we're going to see this slow down. Because I think there's still a vast chunk of players in the league, you know, probably 300 players that haven't been in the protocol this season and therefore are looking at a time where they could potentially be sidelined due to COVID. The only team is the Flames that's really been knocked out with 20 plus positive tests where you don't need a test for 90 days. The problem is they might be facing teams that have issues which could cause postponements in addition to the capacity restrictions that you mentioned.
Boy, it felt like it was hours from Gary Bettman talking about how revenues were ahead of the 1920 projections. And you're like, oh boy, that's a really bold thing to say. You gone ahead and cursed it. And then boom, Flames got hit. I think we're over, probably flirting with 100 games canceled at this point, or postponed, I should say. We've seen some empty buildings for some national broadcasts in this country. We're seeing capacity restrictions. Like, how big is this IOU the owners hold from the players, and what does that do to the sport and the business for the next 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, it's certainly not good. And what it does to the sport, particularly for the players, is it keeps earnings down. It keeps the cap flat for the foreseeable future. The NHL, I think, was a little bit optimistic in their projection previously at that Board of Governors meeting, you know, saying the players can pay this off in 3 years. You know, we'll see. I've done the nerdy spreadsheet calculations. I've looked at where that's heading, and I don't see an avenue in which the NHL gets to $5.2 billion this year based on these postponements, and part of it will have to do with how these games are made up, particularly in Canada. Like, how quickly will these restrictions that are in place be reversed? The longer that drags on, the less revenue the NHL will ultimately be able to pocket, because at a certain point they're going to have to reschedule those games and play them regardless of whether they're in full buildings or not. And they're just trying to hold off as long as they can to get some insight and information from the government. It's just pretty far down on the government's priority list at this point to take care of, given the health crisis that they're dealing with.
It was weird. I went looking Saturday night here. There was not a late game on Hockey Night in Canada in January. It was very eerie, odd, and I think a lot of us got flashbacks to March of 2020 when we started seeing these cancellations coming again. Can you sort of walk us through what that decision tree looks like for the league when they, for example, have said no to the Islanders in Vegas playing in Calgary this week, but yes, Ottawa will play the Flames? Like, what goes into that decision? Can you pull the curtain back a little?
I wish I could, other than the fact that there's no hard and fast rule. Like, it's not like they get to a certain threshold of players missing and they say, okay, we're going to decide to postpone the game. Part of it has to do with the NHL looks at the actual impact of the players in consultation with hockey ops, saying, hey, you know, it's not just that they're missing six guys. It's that, I don't know, the Flyers are missing Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier. Pick a team. And it depends on the level of players that they're missing. It depends on the number. It depends on the data that comes from the test. That the players take COVID-wise. They look at the, quote, viral load and how likely they are to be contagious. What stage do doctors and epidemiologists project they're in terms of contagious level? And that all kind of gets mashed together, and they try and make a decision. Now, they've tried to power through as many games as possible, putting some teams in some unenviable positions. You know, the Montreal Canadiens were complaining – right after the holiday pause, they went down to Florida and started their season. They had a game where they played against the Panthers with 16 skaters, and they're saying, well, hold on a second. Like, why are we forced to do this? You hear a lot of belly aching from the Montreal media, and the Panthers are sitting there going, wait a second, guys, we just played with 16 skaters before the pause. Like, this is just part of the deal. It's not going to be pretty every night. And then you end up with a situation where the Flyers, for instance, could have iced a team with 20 skaters with their taxi squad tonight, or 18 skaters, and they're not, because they've sort of campaigned and petitioned, and I'd be curious to see whether there are additional positive tests. One thing that I should remind everyone about is what you see publicly isn't necessarily all of the data and information that the NHL has, in the sense of, there's this process to confirm a positive test. So the player could test positive, but he might not be announced as confirmed positive for 2 days later. So sometimes it takes a little while to confirm that. And the other part of it is there's also some wacky tests that have come back as well. I think I was told New York Rangers coach Gerard Gallant, for instance, their team is out west right now. They played the Kings last night. He had two positive and two negative tests on the same day. Like, how does that happen? So, there's all sorts of things that go into it.
Well, in fairness, some days I feel like I'm dying, and then, oh, geez, I don't feel too bad. And then, oh, my God, my guts are killing me. I can't get off the toilet. Oh, no, and I feel better now. So I know exactly what he's going through. We'll switch gears a little bit. We'll talk about Kane maybe in a moment. But while we're talking, you mentioned Philadelphia. And I guess two things. Looking at the standings, a lot can change. Some teams have played 28 games. Some have played 37. There's a lot of discrepancy. But in a way, mm-hmm. do you feel like what we see here today in the Eastern Conference is almost what we're going to get? There could be some shuttling and jockeying for position, but outside of maybe Detroit getting into a wild card spot, does it not feel like maybe the Eastern Conference teams are set?
Boy,
yeah. I think it's absolutely done in terms of the eight teams that are getting in. I mean, you see Boston and the way that they've separated themselves. They've been on a bit of a run here. Ridiculous night for Brad Marchand too, and his beak. But like you look at the standings and you're like, where's the intrigue here? Yeah, and I think that's what's actually going to make these last 4 months of the regular season a bit of a slog in the East in terms of where's the interest level, where's the drama. You know, I look at the teams that are beneath Boston in the standings, and I go, which one of these teams could possibly go on a run to get themselves into that 600 points percentage range? Maybe the New York Islanders, but like they just can't score 64 yeah. goals in 28 games. Like it's not going to happen unless something changes drastically. So I don't see another team jumping into that top eight. And it's funny because it's like the exact opposite in the West. You know, you've got all this intrigue at the bottom in terms of the wild card. And even in the Pacific, you see the Ducks sort of falling back. The Kings have now jumped into a wild card spot. I keep coming back to this in terms of looking at the standings for the reasons you mentioned, too, with the discrepancy in games. Got to look by points percentage. It's such a different picture that you're seeing. Based on points, the way the NHL has it on their website.
No, I mean, you're bang on, because you look in the East. Well, Boston, yeah, they got the win last night. They're 4 points up on Detroit. Yes, but they have 4 games in hand. It's a 625 winning percentage against a 500. You're right.
I hadn't looked at it. It's sewn up, man.
Right? It's going to take some kind of a collapse and incredible run from some team on the outside, because I don't know that we see anybody busting out one of those eight teams in the East. Which is
it also makes the seeding part of it not really that interesting either, because you're like, what's the onus to get first place in our division other than potential more home ice? You know, you're not earning a better matchup by and large because there's not a lot separating all these teams, you know, at all.
What's the word on Chuck Fletcher in Philly? I'm looking. It was December 2018. He arrived as the GM, and it's been a group that's been middling for a lot of the last decade plus, but he tried to overhaul a blue line. He did. I don't know if it's any better, and they're still probably not playing the type of hockey they want to in front of Carter Hart.
Yeah, and that's kind of the big thing, is that everyone was looking at Carter Hart this year saying, well, if we could just get good goaltending, then we'd be in a spot where, you know, our team would probably have a chance to make it. Well, Carter Hart's at a 912. And I would argue in some ways, yes, he's had some, you know, painful nights in net. But, you know, in some ways, when you look at his stats, they're a little bit deceiving. He's probably closer to 918 or 920. You take like a 7-1 stinker out of the mix, a stat crusher, and the numbers look a lot different. But as far as this team in general, like, what's the word on Chuck Fletcher? It's that there have been a lot of moves made that really haven't paid off. You know, the Ryan Ellis deal, to take on that kind of term, even after this season ends, he still has 5 years left at 625. He's played a grand total of 4 games this season. And he looked to me like a guy watching him in Nashville that, When he's healthy, he's productive, he's efficient, he's all those things. But he struggled with health at times in Nashville. It felt like a guy that had some wear on those tires. That was a big bet that didn't pay off. You look at Rasmus Ristolainen, like that trade is Ristolainen is an pending unrestricted free agent. They gave up Robert Hague, a first and a second to get him. And it just hasn't worked out. And so now Philly's in this position where they go, okay, what do we have? Where are we going? How do we find a way to rejig this group? Because, you know, to use Chuck Fletcher's own words coming out of last summer when he also made the decision to trade Jake Voracek for Cam Atkinson, it was, we can't keep bringing back the same team and expect different results. I would imagine that at this deadline, that same conversation includes Claude Giroux, the captain. But I think he's got a pretty important milestone to get to first. All these postponed games have sort of shuffled the deck on the schedule, but he's due to hit 1,000 games played as a Flyer in early March before the deadline. I would think that would put a nice bow on what's been a rather underrated career in terms of his productivity. For whatever reason, the Flyers haven't won a playoff series since he's been their captain, and a lot of fans in this market point to that and say, hey, you know, we can't win with this guy, but he's done just about everything you've asked of him.
So what is the team getting if they go add Claude Giroux after that 1,000-game mark and ahead of the deadline in theory? I see a big salary, but actual salary owed is quite low. It's the last year of a long deal. Like, what's left there, and what are you adding?
Well, what's left is a productive player who works his arse off. I mean, he's a guy, 29 points in 32 games this season. Three times in his career, he's finished in the top five in Hart Trophy voting. And what I would love to see from Claude Giroux is just when you take the shackles off, the pressure off of being the guy. He's worn the C in the Philly market for a long, long time. I always, and I've spent a long time around him and gotten to know him really well. One of his biggest flaws is how much pressure he puts on himself. He wants to win that bad that it drives him crazy. And it's an admirable trait in a way, but I think it's also been his biggest detriment, the pressure that he puts on himself to win. And so I'd love to see him go put in a spot where, hey, he can be your second line winger, third line center, whatever you call it, whatever spot you want to use him in, and put him on a really good contending team and say, just go be you and he'll be fine. So I think you'd be getting an unbelievable playoff addition, someone that can contribute in a big, big way.
I do want to ask you, he's Frank Saravalli, our NHL insider. I want to ask you about Evander Kane. We hear that it's not only, not just teams, multiple, it led to believe maybe even double digit teams checking in with his agent, and I find myself sitting here today being, what were you thinking? Because a day ago I said, who's going to call for this? This guy is, you know, he's a degenerate and he's this and he's that, but it's pro sports and we'll look past a few things if you can come in and make us better. What's your read on when, who, if for Evander Kane at sweepstakes, if you want to call it that?
I mean, part of it on my end, and I'm not denying that there are teams that are kicking tires and are interested and are doing their own investigative and due diligence process. I do turn a little bit of a side eye to his agent saying it publicly. Like, when asked, what else was he going to say? No one's calling about Evander Kane. I mean, the situation is fresh. Yes, he's an incredibly productive player on the ice. But we still haven't really gotten clarity yet on the facts of the situation. And frankly, we won't for a while because this impartial arbitrator process is detailed and takes a long time. Even after they finally have the hearings, I was just reading through the CBA before our chat, that it takes the independent arbitrator sometimes 30 days to return his ruling. So this could be a 6-week, 8-week, if not longer, process to really get a resolution on what's going on with Evander Kane. He is free to sign with a team as a total unrestricted free agent right now. And I have no doubt that there have been some cap strap teams, some contending teams that have shown interest. I just know from the people that I've talked to, and the managers that I've spoken to, I'm sort of slowly canvassing the group saying, you know, do you have interest in Evander Kane? Like, a lot of times the answer is a quick no or no chance. So I'd be curious to see which team is really going to put themselves out there. And frankly, I think at this point you'd have to also include and poll or canvass your leadership group to say, hey, are we, you know, the Edmonton Oilers, for instance, were listed as one of the teams yesterday that's been in touch with Evander Kane's camp. You know, you'd have to be talking to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and say, hey, do you want this guy here? What do you know about him? You know, are you comfortable if we go out and make a move like this?
John Klimberg, what's going on there? This is a pretty productive player, but it sounds like he wants Haskinen money, and I know which guy I'd pick.
I think that's exactly – you've summed it up better than anyone I've heard to this point, which is he's looking for Haskinen money, and they're saying, hold on a second. We appreciate your contribution here. You've been here a long time, but Miro Haskinen at 845 is the very top of our food chain here, and you're not getting any penny close to that in terms of what your next AAV looks like if you want to be a Dallas star. So they've gone around and around in circles. It's been quiet because the Klingberg camp looks at the defense market and says, hey, this is what we believe we can get. And the Dallas Stars are saying, well, then you're going to have to go do that elsewhere because we're not paying that type of number. So interesting to hear his honesty, his emotion over the weekend, saying he feels like he's been, you know, disrespected or not given enough respect for his contribution there. But I think the Stars are trying to rag the puck a little bit and saying, hey, we're still kind of in this playoff race here. We've got a 563 points percentage. We're right behind some of these teams that are knocking on the door in the playoff chase. Let's give it a few weeks and figure out where we are before we go ripping this Band-Aid off and potentially making a move at the deadline. But I think you'd have to go back to last year and look at the decision and gamble that they made with a player like Jamie Oleksiak. There was so much interest in him on the defense market. They decided to hang on to him, see if they could sneak into the playoffs. They fell 3 or 4 points short, and Oleksiak walks to Seattle in terms of the expansion draft and free agency, and they lost out on, you know, potentially some significant assets by not moving him at the deadline. I don't think they have this opportunity or option to let something like that pass this time around.
Frank, good to catch up to you, buddy. Have yourself a fine week. Take care, man.
You too, guys. Thanks.
There's Frank Saravalli, our NHL insider, brought to you by South Trail Exports. Inventory shortages across the city. Right now is the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit southtrailexports.com. Right up on the top, we will come back. And you know what? We've been talking about Rich Winter was on yesterday with Eric Francis, and I know we're getting close to being that 24-hour news cycle and that, but we haven't really dipped into it. Mark Giordano, Andrew Mangiapane, both are his clients. One is a former Flame. One's a current Flame. Could they both be Flames again at the same time? Might they both be former Flames? We'll get into it when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.